Well, Harvey, it's good to speak with you again.
Nice to hear your voice, Candace, and see you.
How are you feeling?
Well, you know, it was a mixed up trial. You know, we had jurors, in the middle of the trial say they didn't want to be there. And towards the end of the trial, you know, it got very, very serious with one of the jurors who just said, I won't be in the same room with the people who are making the decision. And, I have spoken to five or six judges, three or four close friends of mine, some I just know, and they have never experienced what we experienced in the courtroom with three jurors complaining about the proceedings as they were going on.
Yeah, I was following that in the news, and obviously the jurors were pretty explicit to the judge that they felt that there was intimidation, that some of them were being mistreated according to whether they were coming on one side of the issue or the other. And so I was very surprised, and I tweeted actually out on X, I don't see how they can't say this is declare this an immediate mistrial. And they didn't. They didn't declare it an immediate mistrial.
Well, we wanted it declared a mistrial. Arthur Iadala, my head lawyer, Arthur and Diana are fabulous, and Mike Sabella and Jennifer Bongean, I had a fabulous team. They rose and, you know, said one time after another, this is a definite mistrial. And at one point, I was, you know, frustrated, and I addressed the judge myself, and I said, Your Honor, this is a matter of a profile and courage. It's not important enough to keep the trial going. Something is radically wrong here when there are playground tactics. When somebody is being threatened, I'll take you outside and we'll settle this outside. That's not the way to settle somebody's life, in this case, my life.
Why do you think the judge didn't declare a mistrial?
I have no idea. I have no idea whatsoever. I think he maybe thought he could power through it, but you can't power through those things. Those things are too important.
You know, Harvey, I have to say, on some matters, I think that you remain, I would almost say, optimistic when it comes to the court system, even in making a plea to the judge. And I can just tell you on the outside, looking in with a lot of the cases that are happening, you know, there's big news regarding the Epstein case that, you know, they're just kind of going to leave it alone and we're not going to get any client lists. There's been the Diddy case, which happened last week, and he got great news despite overwhelming video evidence that one of his producers had. And even with Justin Baldoni, you know, elements of his case getting dropped that people feel are unfair. All of these having taken place majority in New York, people are wondering if the system is even fair, forgetting your case, but just taking a look at everything on a larger picture. Is there something rotten in the New York system?
Well, I certainly am, you know, sickened by the results. You know, there's no reason that this trial shouldn't be a mistrial. And so you can add me to those voices, you know, who feel that something's wrong with the system. This is a terrible outcome.
But have you considered that it could be deeper than that? And I know that I've asked you this offline, but that there was somebody who wanted you put away, that there may have been someone who wanted your company. I mean, these are genuinely the questions that I have asked myself when looking at your case, because to me, there is just overwhelming evidence that you were set up here. Like, there's just no objective look at the evidence, in my view, that you could come away going, Harvey Weinstein is definitively guilty. And someone like Diddy, who we have on camera beating a woman, is definitively not guilty. I have to ask you that question.
Well, I just have to say that, you know, the district attorney in this situation is relentless. They will spend and have spent millions of dollars. They flew to Australia to confer with one of their clients. They flew to Washington State to confer with the other one of their clients. They will spend whatever it takes to spend. They hired an expert witness who told the jury that it's okay for Mimi to have to quote, say that I raped her and then have consensual sex with me 2 weeks later, mm-hmm. You know, that was normal. at $750 an hour plus expenses, you're hard pressed to find anybody who wouldn't say what that expert said for that kind of money. But they said it in the court and the district attorney paid it. I am sure when they got paid through with that bill, you know what I mean, at $750 an hour, you're talking about $50,000. To get an expert witness to say that it's okay to have consensual sex with your rapist. Common sense was thrown out the window. You can buy anything. And apparently the DA bought that instruction, that advice was paid for.
And that's what I'm saying, Harvey. Like I said, I've looked at this case deeply, and it looks to me like a modern day hit. And I'm sorry to say that. I genuinely think that for whatever reason, I don't know who you upset, I don't know what they were after, but it just looks to me like a rigged system and they took you out. And there are a cast of characters are involved that make me uncomfortable. I mean, Gloria Allred's name, I don't know that she's ever lost a case. And I think back to even when Michael Jackson was trying to publicly signal, and again, this is all allegedly, he's no longer alive, that Gloria Allred was a part of sort of this team of people who can just take people out when they want to. And I can't ignore that. I can't ignore those things. I can't ignore what's happening to you. I can't ignore the overwhelming evidence. To me, it looks like it was just a show trial, and the outcome was already determined before you even stepped into that courtroom.
Well, Gloria Allred came to me with Mimi when she first announced Mimi's trial. She went to my lawyers and said, for $750,000, pay us off and we'll go away. And we didn't pay him. You know, because we thought it was absolute nonsense. And also there were term limits at that point. But she made a deal with the district attorney to waive the term limits in return for Mimi's testimony. So, I mean, a deal was made by Gloria Allred. Gloria Allred is the villain and one of the villains here. And she made the deal to prove what you say is true.
Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is not unlike the structure of a modern gang. You know, you pay us and you'll be fine. If you don't pay us, then you're going to have trouble. And it looks like you walked away from the deal. You could have given her $750,000 and she would have gone away, and you opted not to. And you have been fighting for your life ever since. You know, it's one of these things that, like I said, the conversation is very different from when you went in, and this conversation would have been impossible a few years ago. But people are starting to see that this isn't a coincidence that this keeps happening, that the same characters are involved from even the publications. I mean, the New York Times, you, Justin Baldoni, you know, they publish a piece absent a lot of information, and then suddenly the attack dogs are out in full force.
Well, even the New York Times in this situation, you know, amazing as it is, you know what I mean, with the investigation that's going on with the New York Times, they did a piece about the jurors and what the jurors went through on this trial. And they had four or five jurors and their testimony to the incredible nature of being threatened by one another during this trial. So, I mean, the New York Times, you know, just to bring it up, is there's a young man named Clark Patterson who just wrote an article about the New York Times and wrote an article about the two journalists who wrote the first hit piece on me. And I think if you tangle with the New York Times, you're dead. Yeah. You know what I mean? They have infinite resources, and they will call up those resources and they will go after you no end. And he wrote a piece, you know, he had the courage to write a piece. It's in MSN and it's on Medium. The full 17,000 words is on Medium. And nobody is out there rushing to publicize the fact that the New York Times original piece about me was wrong. You know, and the Ashley Judds of this world and the other and the Rose McGowans and all of what they said was bullshit. I mean, nonsense, excuse my language, you know, and this reporter captured all that, but there's no public outcry, you know, with his piece. But I think it's going to get there. I think slowly but surely it's working its way up through the system, but it's slow.
Yeah, and you will definitely find a sympathetic audience with my audience, because we speak about this often. I think the only way that we can make sense of the present is to look at the past. And I have examined the New York Times through the lens of how they were created. I mean, we've been wrongly, I think, deluded to believe that journalists are sort of this like fourth estate, that they protect against corruption. They're a part of the corruption. Historically, the New York Times had a relationship with the CIA. That is just a fact. It is a fact that is available at anybody's fingertips. They are an extension of the state. And so that is why when I ask you those questions, and I was not surprised when they chopped up Justin Baldoni's lawsuit because he went after the New York Times. You can't win against the New York Times. Judges have lost going after the New York Times, saying that the New York Times was defaming them, as I've shown on my show. When I look at that and I think that the New York Times was initially the people behind them went after you, I do think that you stepped on somebody's toes. Like there's somebody's toes that you stepped on that you may not have been aware of when you were in Hollywood, because you had a lot of power. You had a lot of power.
I agree with you, Candace. You know, looking back on it, you know, there are definitely people, you know, I can't say who.
Why not? Why can't you say who? What do you have to lose?
Because I'm not sure that I'm right. You
know,
and
you say, I think. Maybe
I will say that I think there are people whose toes I stepped on. And I will also say I think there are politicians whose toes I stepped on. And as a result of the two forces mingling together, and you throw in the New York Times, and you have enormous prejudice against me, an enormous fight against me, and an enormous, I don't know what to say, you know, just a force against me. Of all these forces coming together. But it's weakening. It's weakening. It's weakening because of you. And I can't tell you that, having done your interview, how many people come up to me in whatever little street credence I have now. Cops come up to me. Workers come up to me. Wherever I'm at, wherever I'm out, people come to me and say, I saw you on Candace. I saw you on Candace. Keep up the good work. Keep up your good work, because you're cracking that system. And Clark Patterson is out there cracking that system too. You know, it won't permeate forever, and it's not as strong as it thinks it is.
It's not. And we're seeing that the fraying is happening now. But I really want to push you on this point, Harvey, because I think it's very significant. Who were the politicians' toes that you stepped on? And we're not making any allegations against them, but it's interesting. It'd be an interesting rabbit for me to chase, to know which politicians you think you may have upset, because I'm telling you, the New York Times is an extension of the state.
Well, I think that, you know, with the Amber situation, you know what I mean? I got off with not even a misdemeanor. I just got off with an understanding that Amber was an unreliable witness. This is the woman who taped me, made the telephone call, set me up with the police officers, and the police officers wanted to prosecute me. And I think that as a result of me getting off, what I had was I got jurisdiction in Italy, and in Italy, I got my people to go to the judge in Italy and open up sealed paperwork, which admitted that when she was 17 years old, she was living in a house paid for by her pimp, $5,000 a month, and getting $1,000 a month sexual congress for having sex with this guy. Not her pimp, I guess her boyfriend, you know, whatever, but she was paid for sex. And then she also went to a party, a bunga bunga party, with the prime minister of Italy, Berlusconi, and she also complained to the press about that. She later on said her boyfriend raped her in Italy, and she had huge, huge press. So when this situation happened with me, she just wanted huge press, and she got huge press. She became a famous person. But when I got off, Cyrus Vance, who was the district attorney, was accused of leniency in my situation. And then when the New York Times published its piece, they went after me hell to leather. So I think Cyrus Vance was one of those people who wanted to see me, screwed. And certainly went out of his way, you know what I mean, with an incredible, you know, force that they put together in the district attorney's office to convict me the first time.
I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again, that I am pro-life. That means standing with mothers before their baby is born and long after. That's exactly why I partner with Preborn, because Preborn isn't out to judge women. They're just making motherhood possible for them. They provide free ultrasounds, they share the gospel of Jesus Christ, and most importantly, they stay after the baby is born with real practical support by giving expecting mothers diapers, baby clothes, even housing and financial help for up to 2 years after the baby is born. That's what true Christ-centered compassion looks like, and here's how you can be a part of it. For just $28, you'll give a mom a free ultrasound and also a chance to see her baby, because when she does, she's twice as likely to choose life. Preborn is on a mission to save 70,000 babies this year, so don't just say that you're pro-life. You can actually live it now by donating. Just call 855-601-2229, or you can head to preborn.com/Candace. Again, that's preborn.com/Candace. Also, I want to tell you guys about Cozy Earth. I know there are a lot of people out there who are like me, maybe just had a baby, and those first few months are incredibly chaotic. You're recovering, you're feeding around the clock, you're trying to catch sleep whenever you can. The last thing that you need is to overheat in the middle of the night, tossing and turning in uncomfortable sheets. Well, I can introduce you guys to something that actually helps, and that is Cozy Earth. These are, without question, the softest, most breathable sheets that I've ever owned. They're made from viscous bamboo, which means that they naturally help regulate your body's temperature. Even in the summer heat, you can stay cool and you'll stay comfortable. Cozy Earth offers a 100-night sleep trial. You can try them during the hottest nights of the year. If you don't love them, you can return them hassle-free. But trust me, you're not going to want to, because they also offer a 10-year warranty on all bedding products. That's a decade of cool quality sleep. So head to CozyEarth.com and use my code Candace, and you'll get up to 40% off. Again, that's CozyEarth.com with promo code Candace. Also, if you get a post-purchase survey, make sure to let them know that you heard about Cozy Earth right here on my show, because your bed should be more than just a place to sleep. It should be your happy place. Cozy Earth makes that possible. You know, Harvey, I had a very interesting conversation recently with Courtney Love, of all people, and she she had a very interesting take on things. She says a lot, and I think that there is a lot of sense to what she shares. And something that she was speaking to me about regarding cases is that she said that in Hollywood, she was aware that sometimes the press will go after someone, and she wasn't referring to your case, because they want publishing rights. Like, she's like, you know, a person grows too big, or they own a catalog of something, and then they'll start making up rumors about this person. The next thing you know, he's forced to sort of sell his company. Kind of similar, by the way, with what happened with Michael Jackson. If you take a look at that case, he had almost owned the Beatles catalog. He was definitely fighting Sony and winning, and then suddenly these allegations began swirling. And so in my mind, I thought, you know, Harvey Weinstein, he had a lot. I mean, you had the greatest movies that were in Hollywood. You had a lot of power. And I'm wondering if there was anybody in Hollywood that you may have been fighting with at that time, like whether it was, you know, another producer or another company or an individual just anything that could have been going on. Because I think there's something bigger happening here.
There wasn't a fight per se, but nobody enjoyed the inner sanctum of Hollywood did not enjoy my success. The people enjoyed my success. The people who went to movies, the young filmmakers, you know, the people who believed that they could do it too if they just had an opportunity to do it. But the establishment, I would not say, was my friends.
Right. And what is the establishment in Hollywood?
It's normally the big studios. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, it's the big studios. But I can't say that they put me into a New York Times article. You know, no. I can say that there was animosity, but I can't say that they were part of this.
Right. No, I'm just wondering, like, who in the end, who owns all those movies now? Who owns your catalog? What happened to your company?
We sold the catalog to a company called Be-In. You know what I mean? Which is owned by the Qatari government. And we sold the other part of the library to a company called Spyglass and Lantern, which is owned by the Saudi Arabian government.
Very interesting. I'm asking these questions because my investigation into this isn't going to stop with the conclusion of your trial. I just think that there was something more sinister that was happening. I've always had that instinct. And on the basis of things that I've just been reading this year about Hollywood and the things that have happened, I do think that it was very intentional. So what happens now with your case?
What happens now with my case is that Arthur Iadala is, you know what I mean, circling the wagons. And you know what I mean, and interviewing the jurors. You know, we're doing the interviews ourselves. And obviously, we have the right to bring this situation back up. And hopefully, the court will listen. But I'm not sure that they will. You know, they might just turn us down again and just say, forget about it. Even with all this publicity, even with all the Sturm und Drang of these jurors, you know, the court might just say, look, they made an opinion, you know, the verdict sticks, and you've got to pay the price. So, you know, the district attorney in Jessica Mann's situation, we had a hung jury. And the district attorney wants to immediately prosecute that again. They want to go again, and Jessica Mann wants to go again, which just shows how absolutely off the wall Jessica Mann is. She just wants to continue and continue and continue, no matter how much she has to get on that witness stand. It's her life. It's become her identity. You know, the victimhood is so strong with who she identifies with. This was a failed actress. And as a result, you know what I mean, in Hollywood, she didn't get what she wanted. But I was always kind to her. I was always sweet to her. I opened the doors for her. It's just sometimes I always said to them, I'll open the door, but you have to go through it. It's your talent that wins the game. Even one of her best friends said she didn't go to acting school. She didn't pursue it the way, you know, the great actresses of today and yesteryear went to schools. You hear about all the Jane Fonda, Actor Studio, Meryl Streep, Yale Drama School. You know what I mean? The credentials of these actresses that have succeeded are unsurpassed, the work that they put into their own personal careers. And yet there were people like Jessica Mann who just wanted it to come for free. You know, or wanted it to come through knowing me and or networking at parties that I invited her to. Well, now she's made now her she got paid $475,000, you know, which is more money than she's ever seen. Miriam Hale got $475,000. And the girl who the jury voted not guilty got $3 million.
Unbelievable.
$3 million. From the Walt Disney Company. She lied. I was found not guilty. And she lied, and she put $3 million in her pocket.
I mean, it's one of those things that if the public could read all of their emails, it's stunning to me. I don't know how they put their heads on their pillow at night. You know, if they have any sense of faith, I mean, hell is an eternity. It's scary to me that you could switch so quickly from I love you and XX and smooches and I see Harvey like a father to suddenly being on the stand. I mean, just so many emails. I couldn't read them all. I literally did not have the time, Harvey, to commit to reading all of the emails because that's how many there are after their alleged, quote unquote, sexual assaults or rapes. And for that to be the case, have an overwhelming catalog of evidence that shows that this relationship was consensual and to have the public then be told, oh, no, actually, but this one time it maybe wasn't. And we have no evidence of that other than their word. It should terrify everyone. That is why this case is so important to me, because I have three sons, right? And we can't live in a world where women can essentially throw out their bodies like it's the casting couch. That's what they wanted. They wanted an exchange. These are sugar baby relationships. And then, you know, I'm going to renege on that because I didn't become the next Angelina Jolie. And so now I'm saying that actually I was raped.
Well, just, you know, Jessica Mann did exactly what you're talking about. Mimi Hale did exactly what you're talking about. And Kaya did exactly what you're talking about. You know, there are emails that are filled with good thought, you know, and there's not one disagreement on any of those emails. There's no like, Harvey, you were rude to me at a party, or you didn't let me in, or you didn't get me invited somewhere. They would ask me for tickets. And even if it was an impossible situation, you could see through the emails the effort that was made to get them into the event. Mm-hmm. You know, I took these, you know, even after the relationships ended, I took it seriously that they were friendships here, and that these were people who wanted to get into the industry, and I was trying to do my part to help them get into the industry. But Kaya broke my heart. We got her into the Lee Strasberg Institute, the toughest school for acting in New York, and she was modeling and making good money, and she said she couldn't afford to go. I mean, but we got her in, and she just should have gone, but she didn't go. She didn't put the work in.
It's unbelievable. It truly is unbelievable. And I can imagine that it's difficult for your family to have to go through this. But are you optimistic on the outcome that, you know, once Arthur shows that this clearly should have been declared a mistrial, that they might do the right thing here?
Candace, I like you say, with the system the way it is, I'm not optimistic and I'm not pessimistic. I'm somewhere in the middle. I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't know what's going to happen. It's like I said to the judge the first time, it's a profile in courage, you know, to the judge.
I think there are people way above their pay grades that make these sorts of decisions. And I mean, we're speaking about that today on the podcast, and we've been covering all of this, but you know, we're going to continue to cover this case, Harvey, and, you know, hopefully the right thing will happen here. If nothing else, this has contributed to an international conversation about what the Me Too movement is, about the fact that people don't actually get justice when they go, you know, when they go through the court system. I would say especially in New York and Los Angeles, there seems to be a particular strand of corruption that I can't quite figure out. And like I said, you have a case where Justin Baldoni is even seeing the results of that. And he did nothing but try to make a movie with a woman that he adored, which was Blake Lively, and has had his life just raked through the coals.
Well, recently, Candace, the international part of what you say is actually happening. There's a fissure there. And what happened was in Italy, in my case in Los Angeles, which is under appeal for Eugenia Chernichova, the man, Pascal Vasodimi, is now on trial for perjury in Italy. So, you know, we are hoping that we win the perjury trial, and rather than have to go through the years of appeal, you know what I mean, that we would have to go through, that if we win our lawsuit in Italy, that they could vacate the sentence and we could be free of that charge in Italy, charge in California. So this is, you know, big news in the world of, you know, this whole Me Too movement, that Italy is taking an active stand against the Me Too movement by having this trial.
Yeah, that is amazing. When is your LA appeal? When is that case going to be heard?
We file it this week. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how long it could take. It could be a year. It could be 2 years. I don't know. You know, I mean, hopefully sooner than later. But I do not know the answer to that question.
And you're in Rikers, where I should just going to mention this. I mean, talking about how rough that prison is, we were supposed to do this call last week and then everything got locked down because there was a stabbing. Is that correct?
A gunfight and a stabbing. And, you know, I was at, you know, sitting at the dentist's office at 12 o'clock with, you know, more than 2 hours to prepare to go to do the interview. And then the lockdown happened. This is a very rough place. This is an unhygienic place. You don't get your shirts. You don't get your socks. You don't get your underwear. You know, the food is rancid. I mean, it is really awful, you know, the food. And it's just, it took me 5 days to get a pillow when I got back. And a pillow is in the patient's bill of rights, but I didn't get the pillow. I had to have Arthur and Craig, you know what I mean, lobby the heads of Rikers Island to get a pillow. I mean, and I had a pillow, and they took my pillow, and I guess they gave it to somebody else. I mean, it's just absurd, the fighting for these little things that we take for granted. I mean, I've been in upstate New York in prison, and those things come to you. You know what I mean? The prisons are run better, but Rikers Island is medieval, and it's an entity unto itself, and it's no good. And everybody says it should be closed down, and for once, it should be closed down.
How are you able to keep your spirits up? I am kind of always amazed that your mind is just always so strong throughout all of this. And I'm just wondering what is the solution for you?
I have the strength of my friends, you know, and they're not the friends of Hollywood. They're the friends that I grew up with and the friends that I made along the way that were just genuine and nothing to do with my career. And so as a result of my friends and my family and my kids, you know what I mean, I'm able to just live for, you know, hearing their stories, getting a kick out of their stories. You know, India told me a story, you know, the other day about her being, you know, with her friends, and there was an argument and she didn't want to be there for the argument, and she was able to get out of the house and have somebody drive her. And just, you know, just a simple story like that, just, you know, it's unfortunate that it happened, but it makes my day to watch how ingenious she was to get out of that house when, you know, when she needed to get out of there. And just listening to the kids and talk about movies and, you know, say, hey, you know, because we have a tablet and we get movies normally 6 months later. And my son said to me, hey, Dad, you know, I don't believe that Captain America is going to be a good movie. And I said, no, it looks good. I've heard it's good. Go see it. And he went and saw it and said, Dad, it was terrible. And then I finally saw it, and I had to call him on the phone and said, you know what? You're right. It was terrible. But he just went to F1, Formula One, the Brad Pitt movie, and he said that was great. And he said it was really a great movie, and he's a racing car fan, so he loved it.
Do you know,
so
I saw
just hearing their stories, hearing their tales is the only thing that keeps me going. Otherwise, I would give up.
You know, Twitter is a cesspool, but there's a lot of humor on Twitter. And I did see somebody tweet and it went kind of viral because they did sort of, you know, they're doing all these Disney remakes, and they did the Snow White remake, which ended up being a disaster with Rachel Zegler. And somebody tweeted, I don't care what anybody says, if Harvey Weinstein was out of prison, this would have never happened. And I think everyone acknowledges movies have gone downhill since Harvey has been locked up. And it was a very funny tweet. And I totally, totally agreed. This disaster would not have happened.
Well, you know, it's funny, not to be egotistical about it, but, you know, sometimes I watch my movies, you know, because I get them on the tablet or I see them, you know, on television. And I remember the meticulous amount of work that we did on every film. We were so meticulous, such perfectionists. And that probably got me into trouble because I had a temper and I was angry. But I saw a movie that we made called Kate and Leopold with Meg Ryan and Hugh Jackman. And I said, this can't be any good. It was successful because it was a romantic comedy. And I watched it, and it's a charmer. And James Mangold did a great job, you know, on the film. But I remember the work that we did alongside of him. It was intense to make a simple romantic comedy. But a simple romantic comedy can be so elegant and so winning. I never made Breakfast in Tiffany's. That's too old even for me. But it's beautifully done, just beautifully done. And I tried to emulate that in everything that we did.
Yeah, I used to love it. And this isn't one of your movies, but because you brought her up, Meg Ryan, When Harry Met Sally is one of my absolute favorite movies. And it is quite simple, but it's just a good script and it's very funny.
Well, she's fantastic in that movie, and she's fantastic in Kate Leopold. She's just terrific. And what a force of nature that she brought to the whole enterprise. I mean, and they, you know, like, they have her sing Moon River, you know, on the fire escape. It's so romantic. It's just a delicious little treat. And I saw Shall We Dance the other day, another movie that I made. And I just, you know, I recommended it to a bunch of friends and they had a good time watching it. So some of the, you know, and then I try to watch as many new movies as I can. I can't find the great ones, you know what I mean? But maybe they don't have them on my tablet. You know, they didn't have Nora or The Brutalist or any of those movies haven't been on the tablet, but I'm looking forward to seeing those films.
Costs are still rising on everything, gas, groceries, home repairs. And if you're a homeowner, you've maybe thought, should I call American Financing to refinance and pay off his credit card debt? And then you maybe second guess yourself because you're enjoying a low mortgage rate. But listen, that low rate that you're enjoying, it's not saving if you're also drowning in credit card interest rates at 25% or more. That's the math that nobody wants to face, but it could be costing you thousands. Here's the truth. If you're only making minimum payments, then that debt is going to follow you around for years. That's why people are calling American Financing, because they're saving customers an average of $800 a month by using their equity to finally break free from credit card debt. You owe it to your family to see what's possible. There's no upfront fees. There's no pressure. It costs you nothing to find out what you could be saving every month. And if you start today, you might be able to delay two mortgage payments. So don't wait any longer. Call American Financing today. The number is 800-795-1210. Again, that's 800-795-1210. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net/Owens, AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. As many of you guys know by now, I love Niemi Skincare. Just when I thought their products could not get any better, Niemi launched their brand new Tallow line, and it sold out in under 3 hours. So I called them directly, and there's good news. It's finally back in stock, but only while supplies last. Tallow is incredibly similar to our skin's natural structure. That means the essential vitamins A, D, E, and K are easy to absorb. It helps repair the skin barrier. It locks in moisture. It delivers powerful anti-inflammatory benefits. Niemi takes it a step further by infusing their tallow with natural essential oils, which makes it even more luxurious and effective. Their two new products are the Sunshine Tallow Cream, which is a lightweight whipped face cream that absorbs quickly, which is perfect under makeup, and also their Buzzin' Tallow Balm, a rich balm that forms a protective barrier to seal in moisture and deeply repair your skin. Niemi Skincare is proudly American, conservative-owned, and they are grounded in our values of faith, family, and freedom. It's skincare for those of us who want our dollars to reflect our values. These new tallow products are just the beginning, so don't wait. Head to NiemiSkincare.com and use my code CANDICE10, and you'll save 10% on your order. Start supporting companies that stand for what you believe in. With Niemi, you're not just getting beautiful skin, you're also getting skincare without compromise. Again, that's NIMISkincare.com. And don't forget to use my code CANDICE10. Let me ask you this question. If you got out today, what would you do? What would Harvey Weinstein's life look like if he just said, you know what, there's nothing. Okay, we're releasing you.
First and foremost, kids. I'd move as close to my kids as humanly possible. Second, I would say to myself, am I entitled to make these movies? Will I be canceled? Will I be blackballed? And if I wasn't canceled and blackballed, you know what I mean? I would make movies again. You know what I mean? Not as many as I used to make, but I would certainly make, you know, I have certain ideas about some of the films that I would make. I would certainly try my best to remake Farewell to Arms and just make it simple and elegant. And the actress who plays the part should be British, because she's British in the book, and the American actor should be young rather than Rock Hudson and Jennifer Jones, which was the last version that was made. And you just watch the movie and it's got all the bare bones of the Hemingway thing, but the two actors are so miscast that it's just awful. You know what I mean? I would love to do a simple remake of an elegant, short Hemingway novel, you know, and try to you know, do something like that. And then there are other projects I hope I could do too. Scripts that I read to try and find out if they're owned by somebody or owned by somebody who would help me make them. I would love to do it again. But if I can't do it again, just to get out and be with my children and to be a part of them, and whatever I did work-wise, that would never be number one as it used to be. My kids is number one now. My family is number one, because they're the important thing. I learned my lesson the hardest way possible, what's important in life. And I sometimes took that for granted, more than sometimes, a lot. I took it for granted. But I was a good father throughout. The one thing I can say that people do say about me was that I was a good father, but I would be a better father, a lot better father.
That's amazing. But that's what I also mean when I say that you're still you, like your passion is still there. You love film, and you just kind of want to create beautiful films for people to enjoy. And let me tell you, it is desperately needed. Are you reading any books right now?
I'm reading every kind of book in the world. I've read hundreds of books. I think I read 300 books in 5 years.
Wow.
At least. And I just read a book called Demon Copperhead by Barbara Consalver about Appalachia and that whole crisis with the OxyContin. And I'm describing it so poorly. It's an epic novel. It's a retelling of the David Copperfield story, only set in America, in Appalachia. And it is absolutely, it won the Pulitzer Prize for a reason. It's fantastic. And I read that, and then I read the classic. I read some of the classics I read in high school again, but I read everything. I read Lorne Michaels' biography. I read Graydon Carter's memoir, Barry Diller's memoir, you know, I read, you know, classic fiction. I'm reading The Great Divide about the Panama Canal and it's a historical novel. So you're reading all the time. But speaking of the Pulitzer Committee, with the research that Pat Clark Patterson has done on the New York Times, I'm asking the research that's been done on Roan and Farrow's incredibly inaccurate article in the New Yorker, the Pulitzer Prize should reconsider giving those guys the Pulitzer Prize. You know what I mean? I hope they take the research seriously and read it and just say, wait a second, we should take a look at our decision, because those pieces weren't about work. They were just, she said, the woman said, this is what happened. And nobody did any research. Ashley Judd, you know, he ruined my career. She had a fabulous career. And what was the movie that I ruined her career on? I was fighting to get her Good Will Hunting, to be the girl in Good Will Hunting. Yeah, I mean, nobody called her agent. And Clark Patterson points out that the two reporters from the New York Times never called Michelle Bohan, who was Ashley Judd's agent, and said, where did Harvey ruin her career? Where did Mira Sorvino's career get ruined? Speak to the agent. Speak to Warner Brothers. Speak to a director. Talk to Marty Scorsese. Did Harvey say, Marty Scorsese, don't work with Mira Sorvino? All they had to do was the research, the backbreaking research that is what makes great reporters, what made Woodward and Bernstein. This isn't Woodward and Bernstein, as I'll steal from Clark Patterson. He said they weren't Woodward and Bernstein. They were Thelma and Louise.
Mm, yeah, well, what I'll tell you, Harvey, is when you get to really researching how things work, you'll start to realize that the Pulitzer Prize is also a part of it. It's a part of kind of gifting these journalists so that they can go out and do these sorts of pieces. That is my belief after the research I've done. I'm going to send you a book. And I think you'll find it quite interesting, you know, just a bit about Hollywood and how the journalists are involved and how they've kind of always been involved in sort of helping to further these narratives that they knew were not true. Like I said, they were never the fourth estate. And, you know, the Pulitzer Prize has definitely also always been complicated as well. The Nobel Peace Prize as well. You know, maybe we could get into politics, but I think all of that is there's a veneer there that is starting to crack and people are starting to realize it. So I wouldn't hold your breath for the Pulitzer to reverse the prize. In fact, they award the prizes to the people that successfully execute these sort of hit pieces. Case in point, I was just covering another journalist who did it to this like nice Mormon family. Everything she wrote was deceptive. And then she was awarded with a press award for it. So, yeah, don't hold your breath on that one, I would say.
Yeah, I guess not. I guess not. You know what I mean? One can only wish. Yeah. Anyhow.
Yeah. Well, look, you're contributing to it, though. I would say you're helping people to recognize what it is. And I do think the future is going to be better. I definitely don't want your life to have been sacrificed so that the future could be better and foster these conversations. But they're happening. They are happening. And the mainstream media is failing, where independent media is picking up. It is a different world than when you went in, 100%.
Well, Candace, you know, I mean, I face, you know, I mean, there could be a sentence, you know, I don't know how long that sentence can be. So I face danger, you know, if that trial isn't get called a mistrial, you know, I mean, that case, you know, I mean, that I'm up against, you know, we won two of the three, but we didn't win the third. And the third is a dangerous case, Miriam Halley. So I don't know. I'm in a period of just, you know, just not knowing what my fate is. And it's just, to me, something that I have to do And it's not easy to get it done. But I took a lie detector test with Jessica Mann. I sent you, or they sent you, the results, and I passed with flying colors. I took a lie detector test on Eugenia Chernichova, the girl in California, and I passed with unbelievable, the highest you could get. And I mentioned Cy Vance, who really went against me, the district attorney. I used his lie detector person because I didn't want anybody to say that I cheated in any way or we used a lie detector test friendly to us. But I'm going to take one on Miriam Halley and I'm going to take one on her and get that in here so once and for all people can understand that that case, you know what I mean, is not true. You know what I mean? I never assaulted that woman. Never, ever, ever in a million years. But it was worth money to her. They went after the money. And you know what I mean? And here I face this incredible situation that I'm in. But this was for the money. This was for the money. Gloria Allred called it reparations. You know, the other thing with Gloria Allred, Candace, is I used her daughter, you know what I mean, you know, to work for me. And I bought her daughter's script when I made the Trayvon Martin documentary because she wrote a brilliant book about the trial of Trayvon Martin. And so one of the episodes in the Trayvon Martin documentary that I made features her work. And when this thing exploded, her daughter, Gloria Allred's daughter, was collateral damage. Gloria Allred represents Mimi Halley. She's always there for, you know, right after the trial. Somehow Miriam Halley, instead of flying back to where she lives, she showed up to have a victory lap. Gloria Allred flew back to New York to have a victory lap. She's there in the courtroom. She's just there. It's clear. It's clear. Did I piss off somebody? Yeah. Amongst others, I pissed off Gloria Allred in a big way.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say she's someone that is worthy of an investigation in and of itself because I'm telling you, this woman is involved in a way that is so evidently clear to me. And there's just no way that like Michael Jackson puts her on a short list and basically says his whole life is being ruined. I had to sort of re-examine the facts of that case and what was happening to him behind the scenes. And every time her name comes up, it seems to be that she's involved in no good. Even her client has spoken out and said that they were treated terribly by her and that they didn't get the sense that she was in this because she wanted justice for the victims, but rather she was kind of a part, and I'm paraphrasing here, of a larger syndicate. She is somebody that I'm definitely interested in. And I hope sooner rather than later, we're able to determine what exactly it is that she's a part of, because it's something sinister. There's no question about it.
Well, I'll tell you what I know of it to be. She says that she's, you know, for women's rights and victimhood and the survivors and uses all the cool language. But when you ask Mimi Halley of the $475,000 that you received, you know, I mean, off of my back and this trial, you know, I mean, Mimi said 1/3 went to Gloria. Gloria takes between 1/3 and 40% for every client she has. You know, when they were talking about getting rid of NDAs, Gloria Allred was the one who said, don't get rid of NDAs because her practice is full of it. Somebody says, I slept with that corporate CEO, you know what I mean? And Gloria Allred goes to him and says, sign, you know what I mean? You know, give us $700,000 and we'll sign a piece of paper saying that we won't say anything about you. We won't tell your wife. We won't do all the underhanded behind the scenes stuff is a big part of Gloria's practice.
Yeah, and I don't see how that's not considered to be extortion in and of itself. You know, do this or that, give me $750,000 or else. Like I said, that begs a further investigation. Harvey, I know we're running up against the hour here, so I want to ask you this. What do you hope your legacy is? That's a big question. Take a second to answer it.
In my time, I tried to do, as well as having the success that I had, I'm very proud of the work that I did. We did a concert with Jim Dolan and John Sykes. We did the concert for New York and raised $100 million for the firefighters and the widows and the policemen who were the first defenders of 9/11. We did a $77 million concert for Sandy with Paul McCartney and The Who and Mick Jagger and The Stones. And we raised $77 million for the businesses that got blown away in Rockaway in New Jersey. And Bruce Springsteen opened the show. It was amazing. And we were able to just deliver and deliver the money quickly because Robinhood was the beneficiary of the money, and Robinhood distributed the money quickly. I was on the board of Robinhood and watched other people, not me, raise $2.5 billion for children's charities in New York. And I was on, I raised $170 million for Amphar in Cannes with the events that I used to organize for the charity. I don't know, you know, there are others, the Children of Mandela. I was GLAAD's Man of the Year. I tried to have my movies talk about society and what was going on in a way that wasn't clobbering people over the head, but certainly not afraid to make a point. And we were never scared of anything. And I tried to do good work, you know, good work on the filmmaking side. And I tried to do good work on the good side. I just wished I was a better husband. And I wished that I just had the non-stupidity to just, how could I do it? You know what I mean? How could I do it? How was I so weak to just want to be with women who were just using me and I was using them? It's just awful to me that a man who had the track record that I had fell for the oldest sin in the world.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Scary.
It is.
Scary.
It is, but you weren't the first, and you certainly won't be the last, and you hope that people learn that lesson. They won't learn that lesson. I promise you there will be another person that falls to the trap of young women and, you know, not making the right assessment there in terms of everything that you have. But, you know, like I said, I will continue to pray for justice in your case. I really think it's a terrifying case to take a look at if anybody examines it, Harvey, and we're going to continue to investigate every element of it up into Gloria Allred. And I'm going to hope that you guys are able to, you know, prove what is obvious here, which is that this should have been declared a mistrial on the basis of what the jurors were saying in this case, Harvey. And so I'm sorry that it is happening in this way, but I do know that there is a greater good that's happening, which is people are beginning to ask questions about what the hell is going on in these courtrooms.
Well, you have a great force for good. I hope some of the people who listen to your show can write to you and say they agree with you on the mistrial. When a jury misbehaves the way the jury misbehaved in my court case, you know what I mean? There should be a mistrial. You know what I mean? Keep those cards and letters and emails going. I date myself when I say cards and letters. You know what I mean? You know, keep those emails, you know, coming, you know, because it's important, you know, for me to read them, you know, and to see that change is coming with it, Candace. You're a fighter for change, and I appreciate you and thank you.
Absolutely. I'm going to send you a book. You're going to fall down the Hollywood rabbit hole. I'm going to send you a book called Chaos. I think you'll enjoy it. It's about the Manson murders. It's incredible. The true story of the Manson murders. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to send you my book. And I've got a book club. So maybe we're going to get a recommendation from you on what book we should read later this year, since you're reading so many. But, you know, Harvey, thank you so much for trusting me with the story. I wish you had trusted me sooner, because we could have been covering this for years.
Yep.
But this is the way it happened. It's the way God wanted it to happen. And I'm just grateful to have the opportunity to share this.
Thank you, Candace. Thank you so much for everything. I appreciate it.
We'll talk soon.
I appreciate you. And congratulations on the family.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Okay. Bye now.